Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Welcome to the OC Bitches.
Welcome to the OC Bitches. It's kind of like we're going into a boxing ring, right? Like
it
in
did.
This corner, yep. Weighing at a pound, a buck and a half, maybe. No, maybe a buck and five.
Yeah, well, I feel like there is kind of a boxing match of sorts that takes place in this episode we're covering today, which is season one, episode 25, The Shower. The synopsis for this episode, reluctantly, Kirsten and Marissa must throw a bridal shower for Julie. Marissa invites a surprise guest, Aunt Cindy, as a way to spite her mom. Seth meets Summer's father at a lunch so awkward it's hard to watch. Teresa enlists Sandy's legal advice when Eddie hits her. And Ryan wants to take matters into his own hands. Directed by Sandy Smolin, written by J.J. Philbin. Woo! Original air date, April 21st, 2004. Holy shit.
Nice. Nice, nice. Yes, I think it's nice that we add the original air date just so we know where
that.
We are.
Like that. And it's also like, whoa, that was a really long time ago. Okay.
Right. That was a suggestion from somebody on my Instagram. So, well, today, The Shower, we have a guest that everybody's been waiting to hear from. We are so excited to catch up with our beautiful guest today. Since it's been a minute, this actor and producer is the youngest of eight kids. Oh my gosh. She came to Los Angeles via Utah and through Vegas. And at the young age of 18, quickly stole our hearts. Well, I think you were actually 20, but quickly stole our hearts as Kirsten's rebellious, feisty, troublemaking, sharp-tongued little sister, Haley Nickel. She went on to have success on shows like North Shore, Reunion, CSI Entourage, Friday the 13th, The Mentalist, The Colony, and LA's Finest. Now a mommy, she's here to reminisce all things OC and chat about some of the most iconic moments that she was a part of, Amanda Righetti. It's so great to have you here. How are
it's
you?
So nice to see you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on and talking to us.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
It's so nice to see you, honestly.
It's nice to see you guys. I've been watching the podcast and it's just so fun. It's so fun to look back on the show, and I hadn't really revisited it since we filmed it, and it really holds up.
Yeah, it's the same for us. We hadn't watched, or I hadn't, in a very long time. And it has been fun kind of going through everything and walking down memory lane.
For sure.
Yes.
Looking at it with a completely different set of eyes. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, now paying attention to the stories, the editing, the costume, everything in a completely different way. But I was just fascinated to know about you. I didn't know this. And this is a wonderful thing about this podcast. We get to know people that we worked with a little bit better, right? So you're the youngest of eight kids?
Yeah. Youngest of eight.
How is that?
It's a pretty blended family. I'm actually the only child that my mom and dad had together. So we're all, it's very Brady Bunch. You know, we all kind of grew up together, but there's a pretty big age gap. There's a 20-year gap between me and the oldest, and all girls, one boy.
Oh, wow.
So there was a lot of drama in the house all the time. I ended up coming out here when I was 18, or LA, and the OC was sort of my first big break.
Wow. So you were 18 when you got cast on the show?
No, well, no, I must have been 20. I had gotten a holding deal. So I got a holding deal through Fox when I was 19. I had done a pilot for Chris and Amy Lippman, and Chris, why can't I remember his last name? Anyway, they did Party of Five, and Party of Five had ended, and Fox was sort of looking for the next teen drama. And the pilot I did was very much teen angst with Rebecca De Mornay, played my mother. And we didn't get picked up, but Fox wanted to sign me to a holding deal. And I don't even think networks do this stuff anymore.
Can you explain what a holding deal is for those
so
listening?
So basically the network or the studio will buy your time and they pay you up front to just hold you and place you on one of their shows. And at the time, I think they ended up picking up the OC instead of the show that I was on, but the OC was a Warner Brothers Fox show because Warner Brothers was a studio on it. And my deal was a Fox, Century Fox deal. So it was only going to be qualified if they put me on a Fox show as the studio. So they kind of plugged me. I think Fox was trying to figure out where to plug me in. And I ended up reading for Patrick Rush, mm-hmm. and he really liked me and then brought me back and read for studio and network. And Marcia Shulman at the time was the head of casting at Fox, and she became a huge champion of mine. Mm-hmm. And they were just trying to sort of figure out where to plug me in. And the OC ended up being one of the first things that they wanted to plug me into. And it was strange because I was playing a lot older than I was. And so the holding deal I had signed it this summer after I turned 20. And then the OC came a couple months later. Anyway, the deal ended up being fulfilled through North Shore, which I ended up doing while you guys were in the second season. Of the OC.
It's such a great thing when you get a casting director who is a champion, yeah. who keeps bringing you back. And I think you're right. Those are kind of few and far between. I feel like there were more 80s, 90s, but there's probably still out there. But
maybe I feel like the industry's changed so much mm-hmm. since mm-hmm. the show was on the air. And a lot of the things
world
that were standard back then are no longer standard anymore.
Right. You know, one thing you brought up that's really interesting is that you were 20 when you got cast on the show and you were younger than myself, Adam Brody, and Ben McKenzie, but you were playing the older aunt, which was so ironic.
Strange.
I know.
It was so strange. and it was weird because I would have scenes with you guys, but also with the parents. And then, of course, the love story with Jimmy evolved mm-hmm. and It was a very odd sort of pairing, but it worked.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first time we see you, honestly, this is brave and courageous. You're literally in your underwear in the pool house at 20, and you've got a presence and you're this powerful female. Do you think that's because you grew up with so many older sisters or did you just have that confidence? Because you pulled it off. We all believed it.
Yeah, thanks. I was shaking in my boots if I had boots. It's interesting. I related to Haley as this sort of, you know, she had traveled a lot and, you know, was just this sort of wild child. And I have been on my own since I was 14. I started modeling. Wow. And so I think the confidence came from, well, I kind of know this girl. Like I know that she, you know, doesn't, her path is all about just doing whatever comes her way next. And I feel like I kind of had lived that as a teenager, modeling overseas and stuff like that. So I kind of was able to carry that into Haley. And I think sort of being on my own as a teenager, I presented like I was a lot older. And a lot of people in the industry thought that I was older than I was. And down the line, that ended up becoming a little bit of a thorn in my side with casting. Mm. But at that time, when I first came to LA, I just carried myself as being sort of older, and it wasn't something I was trying to do. It was just from traveling the world and seeing life differently than in a bubble.
Yeah. For sure. At
14. I had a similar experience. I people thought I was older. I remember auditioning for a show called Northern Exposure when I was 19 years old. And the casting director said, well, you're too old. And I said, it says she's 18. I'm 19. And she didn't believe me. And I had to show her my driver's license. she was crazy. Like, show me. She's, yeah, a little demanding, kind of bitchy. But no, this can be a pretty brutal business. And Rachel, did you ever have that problem or did you have the opposite?
Oh, the opposite. I just turned 40, Amanda, and like I got carded at the market to buy a bottle of wine the other day. And I was like, you can't do this when I'm 40. Like it's just offensive. And
or a really lovely compliment.
You know, right. I'm kind of like, I'm ready for it to just stop.
Well, you know what? One day it does. And it's like pretty abrupt.
Like, so I should try to be a little more grateful.
Yeah. I remember the day it's like, yeah, no, that's not happening anymore.
Oh man. Well, the gray hair.
And even with a mask on behind my
mask, I know. You just can't tell anything.
You can't. Although yesterday I was in Trader Joe's and I had a mask on and everything. And the woman's like, your eyes, you're on a few TV shows. And I was like, what? I was like, what? I was like, sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't know, you know, but she, and I was like, yeah. She's like, yeah, a few TV shows. I was like, yeah. I'm like, how do you know with this mask on? She's like, it's the eyes. I'm like, all right. Yes. Well, there you have it.
That's awesome.
So you were really young on this show and you had to make out with Tate Donovan. How was that?
He's only 20 years older.
Only 20.
No big deal.
It's no big deal.
But he was very youthful too.
He was.
He still gets carded.
He still does to this day.
Tate was really lovely. I mean, I was so starstruck when I was doing the show, you know, being able to work with Peter Gallagher and, you know, and Tate, Melinda and Kelly, you guys all, I feel like you kind of took me under your wing a little bit. Like it really... Because I didn't know what I was doing. It was so, this was brand new for me. And, you know, and Tate was really, he was really lovely and we got along so well. And I don't know, I kind of just threw myself into it. It was, this is what the writers wanted. This is where the show was going. And it was such juicy drama.
And when you started on the countdown, it was already getting some pretty good ratings.
Yeah, it was. I remember the first day that I came into the makeup trailer and the show was such a huge hit. There were just tear sheets of all the press that you guys were doing, plaster all over the walls. You know, I mean, like Misha was on every cover of every teen magazine and there were, you know, TV Guide articles and just, I mean, it was really overwhelming. But it was also like no big deal. And we were on the lot for, I think, those first couple episodes. So the exposure to like the paparazzi and all that stuff didn't really come until I think we were on location at Redondo Beach or something like that. And there was just these massive crowds that would kind of follow the production. And it was just wild. It was like stepping into a completely different world for me because I didn't experience anything like that before. And it was the first gig that actually had an audience and a huge following that I was a part of. So I think in some ways I got a little spoiled because it was my first thing and it was such a huge hit.
We were all nice. I love to hear like I wasn't Julie Cooper to you, right? Because
no.
Good.
No, I remember Peter talking often about what a huge opportunity we had with this show and that, you know, lightning doesn't strike twice. It's so few and far between to have something as wildly successful as this show was. And, you know, I think especially for me, because it was a new thing, it really resonated with me and it stuck with me and it still does, you know, throughout my career, I always think about him talking about appreciating and being grateful for what we have with the show and, you know, and this may never come again. So really enjoy it and appreciate it. And it was so much fun to be a part of and to see the trajectory of it. And what a, pop culture sensation that it was and how much impact it still has, that people still flock to it and talk about it 20 years later, almost, right?
Do you ever get recognized for playing Haley on the OC?
It's rare. It's funny. When I get recognized, it's like people think they went to high school with me.
Right.
Or, you know, or they know me from some social gathering. Like they can't really place where they know me, but they recognize that, you know, my, you know, they recognize my face. I think I was recognized once for Haley at a movie theater in West Hollywood years ago when the show was, I think, in the second or third season.
Your happily ever after is waiting for you in the Chrysler Pacifica and Pacifica plug-in hybrid. With available all-wheel drive, Pacifica helps handle adverse conditions like magic. And with a plug-in hybrid, it can help your range anxiety disappear. Make your drive even more enchanted in the Chrysler Pacifica. And watch Disney's Disenchanted, now streaming only on Disney Plus, rated PG. Disney Plus subscription required. Must be 18 plus to subscribe. EPA estimated 520-mile total range with a fully charged battery. Actual mileage may vary.
Oh, funny.
But you have, I mean, we're on episode 25 here, so I feel like we should mention or get your take on some of your other iconic scenes. First of all, that first episode, the countdown, and showing up and just, you know, taking over the house and this new dynamic, which I thought fits so well because it's Kirsten's little sister and you've got this rapport with Seth and then you throw this rager and you set them up for this really, really, there's no chance they can be successful at a creepy key party thing, right?
It's so funny. I forgot about that. I forgot that, like, I sent them on some, like, swingers party excursion. Yeah. And she was such a brat, Haley. Like, and when I go back and watch it, I'm like, I was sort of mortified watching my scenes. I was like, wow, really? She's really so bratty. Like, you just want to slap Haley. And, you know, but it was, you know, who knew? I mean, who really knew? I had no idea then while we were shooting it, what it would become and that it would become such an iconic moment, you know, and like in the stuff in the pool later on that, you know, with you and me, Melinda, and, you know, but it's such a great episode, the countdown, the way it's edited and, you know, and the flopping back and forth between the kids and the adults and all this setup, the way that they really set Haley up to be a part of, to come back and be a part of the family. It worked so well. It was really great to watch it again and revisit it. I mean, there's a few things that I really forgot about.
But you had so many really awesome moments in this show. And one that stands out for sure is, you know, the stripper club, LA of it all.
It's such a great episode. It's so funny.
Yeah.
And witty. Like I was watching the LA last night and I kept thinking about it. Like as I was watching the podcast and revisiting some of the episodes, I was like, what was the episode with the strip club and Paris Hilton?
Yeah.
And it was crazy madness. I just remember madness around the set because we were in Hollywood,
right,
filming at, I think it was the Avalon. I don't even know what it's called anymore, but it's right there on Hollywood and
I think we knew Vine. Where we filmed, but I forget.
I think
now.
We mentioned it when we talked to Colin Hanks. So,
yes, Colin Hanks.
For that
right.
episode.
Yes.
Yes. And because we were in Hollywood, it was like there was more visibility. And there were people hanging out on the street trying to get, you know, autographs and stuff like that. It was a whirlwind, you know? And then you'd go inside and start filming the scenes and it was like you just step into a different world and the drama ensues. But it's one of my favorite episodes, the LA.
Well, I'd like to compliment you on the performance as well, because it was nuanced and layered and vulnerable, and it brought another dimension to Haley, and we welcomed her back, you know, and I love when Jimmy comes to kind of to rescue you and to rescue Haley.
It's such a sweet scene.
So sweet. Yeah.
And the alley, it's another one I forgot about, but it kind of grounds Haley. It brings her, it makes her a little bit more human. that, you know, she's a bit lost and mm-hmm. having a hard time finding her way. And I think Jimmy's support is the support that she really is seeking from her own family, you know, from her sister and her dad. And they're just not really, they don't understand her. And it's, you know, and Jimmy showing up, it's just such a tender moment of vulnerability from Haley and recognizing that somebody really cares about her and isn't going to let her just throw her life away.
Yeah. I think that's why the attraction is there. They're both pretty flawed characters and there's a history, and I really like them together in this episode. Yeah. And I thought it really, you know, sometimes you're rooting for, you know, I find myself flip-flopping on this, watching this show and yeah. having different feelings than I had back then than I do now, because you're motivated as a character and influenced by those characters' thoughts. But in this episode, I really think that this episode in general has a lot of dynamics going on to, like, we can analyze some of these dynamics going on between all of the characters, because this wedding has a ripple effect, or this wedding happening is going to have a ripple effect. And no, I really like the character. I wish they'd done more with Jimmy and Haley. And I think, you know, I actually saw a quote in an interview that Josh did, where Alan Sippenwall, if you say that correctly, he said, "Why didn't you have Haley?" And he said, "She kept getting other shows on Fox."
I did. And, yeah. I was so hoping to be a part of the OC. And was kind of holding my breath after that first season, and hoping that they would bring me back as more of a regular character, not even necessarily as a regular, but I would be there more often. But again, because of the holding deal, Fox had to sort of place me, because the time, you know, time was running out on the contract terms, and North Shore had come up. And I ended up going to Hawaii to do a guest star on it. And then that ended up parlaying into a series regular. So by the time you guys started shooting the second season, I was already relocated. And I had to fly back in to do, I think I did maybe two episodes in the second season to kind of wrap up the storyline of the character. And it was sort of bittersweet.
If you're like me, you prefer to shop sustainably. So when I was introduced to Fable and their artisan crafted dinnerware, I was an instant fan.
Their dinnerware is made from recycled clays, 100% non-toxic, packaged eco-friendly, and made in Portugal. You'll feel good about the table you set, and I am in love with it. You know what? I really get into plating my food because, you know, we eat with our eyes, and this dinnerware was just the most beautiful backdrop.
My favorite thing to do, honestly, is set the table and host a dinner party. And I am obsessed with dinnerware. I even had like my own dinnerware line a long time ago. So Fable, I mean, I'm in love with it. It's so beautiful. And it just really sets the tone for a beautiful setting and table.
Head over to fablehome.co and use the code DOC to take 10% off your first purchase. So this fall, I am planning to get ready for the holidays, and I get to see family and friends as much as possible.
To get the most out of your fall, try Huzzah. It's the refreshing seltzer with benefits, made with probiotics for gut health. Living your best life never tasted so good.
Huzzah is full of flavor, but it only has 3 grams of sugar or less. The added probiotics help support a healthy gut. Feeling good on the inside helps you live vibrantly on the outside.
These flavors are so good. There's raspberry and lemon, tangy fruitness, and a citrus spark with zero sugar and just 5 calories. Strawberry and hibiscus, ripe strawberries with a tropical backdrop, just 3 grams of sugar and 15 calories.
Ooh, and the juicy pear, crisp and bursting with flavor, only 3 grams of sugar and 15 calories. It's so delicious. And I can stick to my keto diet without worrying about too many carbs.
Yeah, I just love that it's a little bit sweet because I have a sweet tooth, but you also feel really good about drinking it.
Get ready to fill your fridge by stocking up on Huzzah Probiotic Seltzer by using code OC for 20% off your order at drinkhuzzah.com.
That's code OC for 20% off at drinkhuzzah.com.
Before we get into the episode, I do want to mention the pool and the quote dynasty fight between Julie and Haley, which was totally like it was yesterday for me, because it was, you know, we'll be talking about it in next episode, but you're here now. So I thought I would get your take and what you remember, because I remember just having a blast.
Oh,
I mean, short of actually being drunk, it was probably the most fun, you know, because she's actually, you know, with the firemen and the fight in the pool and how I fought to be the one to jump in. And the stuntman said no, because it's only a few inches deep. And I was like, no, I could do this. And and then I tried to do it and I was like, oh yeah, shit, that is shallow. Let's have the stunt people do it.
Yeah. It was so much fun. We laughed a lot. That day. Yeah. We laughed a lot. The shot where you see the stunt people go into the pool always makes me laugh. Where they just, the two of us, you just see our feet, you know, at the end as we like just dump in. And then, oh, it's just, it was so much fun to film. And we had, it was such a great crew. The sentiment around set all the time was just, it was such a great kismet of people between the crew and the cast. It really was a lot of fun to be there. And that day specifically, I remember being just good fun. And it made for fun TV too.
Totally.
I look forward to watching that.
Like when you slap me, it was like, I remember trying to get the slap down.
There's so many people.
Oh no, we were...
that have fallen in
and
that
I couldn't
pool.
Get the timing right. Like, I just remember being kind of like a monkey trying to get the timing right with the slap. But it all worked out. Like, the way they cut it together, it looks really good.
You know, there's so many times as actors, we're like, we don't want to overact. We want to be kind of subtle and, you know, make sure you, you know, do less. Not on this. It was full out hair pulling. Ah!
And the whole bit.
You don't get to normally do that. And are you working now?
Yeah, working. I did a Christmas film called Christmas at the Ranch that should be out this Christmas season. And then I recently did a Reagan biopic where I play Ronald Reagan's mother. And then Dennis Quaid biopic is coming out next year.
Awesome.
Great.
So trying to stay busy during the pandemic.
Yeah, look forward to seeing that, both of those. I'm a sucker for a Christmas movie, let me tell you. I am all for it. We're going to get into the shower today.
Let's get into it and voice your opinions and throw out anything you like, Amanda, because I love, and I think you have I love the idea of analyzing some of these relationships. And like I said before, you know, the whole episode starts with everyone completely kind of reeling from the circus and the whatever you want to call the hurricane that is Caleb and Julie getting married in that Cohen kitchen breakfast.
Yeah, that's how it starts.
And it's so quick. Like it's with everybody, I mean, there's all of us pretty much. I don't think I'm in the opening scene, but Adam and Ryan come in and the handoffs between everybody is so quick, and it's really it's a good setup for it. But obviously everybody has a different opinion and feeling about
getting married in 2 weeks, no less.
In 2 weeks.
Yeah.
right.
Getting right
to
it.
Why is the rush?
Yeah. My favorite part of the whole thing is trying to put together who's related to who and how.
I love that. And I love how Seth talks about, so then Julie Cooper's going to be your stepmom and my
Kirsten's
grandma.
Kirsten's stepmom, Sandy's mother-in-law, Seth's grandma.
I found this in Alan Sepinwall's book. He took it a step further because when Seth says, you know, entangle this incestuous web that I like to call the Julie and Caleb union. Now let's think about this when this bizarro knot gets tied. And then he says exactly that, mother-in-law, stepmom, and grandma. But then if you took it further and if Haley and Jimmy were to get married, Julie would become Jimmy's mother-in-law as well as ex-wife. Jimmy would become Marissa's brother-in-law as well as father. Haley would become Marissa's stepmother and stepsister. And Ryan, if Ryan was adopted, Ryan and Seth would become brothers, obviously. And Caleb and Julie are the grandparents. And Marissa is Ryan's aunt as well as the girlfriend. And we, oh my gosh, that's a little too much. Like I read that and I was like,
my brain just short-circuited.
Yeah, but also I want to see that show.
The spinoff.
Yes. That is what I'm interested in. Oh, the web we weave over on the OC.
But it's interesting drama. Too that, yeah, Kirsten is so flustered, right? And the obvious reason is, oh, you know, my dad's marrying Julie. But whether you're 14 or 40, I don't think any kid wants to see their parents getting remarried, right? So we get to see some stuff that we don't always see with Kirsten, like some of that inner child coming out. And, you know, and Sandy's just taking it like, yeah, you know, he bought my acceptance. So I'm happy. It's fine. Whatever. What? No big deal.
Well, Mindy, you bring that up. I don't know if this is too personal, but how is CG with you getting remarried? How is that with having a kid?
I think it's challenge. I think it was a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it definitely was, you know, I think there's, it's just always some kind of different. I mean, you have parents that remarried, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. And it's, you know, but, you know, the one thing it's really important is to, you know, just model a wonderful relationship. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure she would have, might have a different answer, but that's her, her truth. But, you know, we're all pretty.
On Valentine's Day, 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country. And even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
You lovely all get along. As a family now.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's an
but
adjustment.
No, it's never, never easy. But right. I started just paying attention to what Kirsten is like. Just not there's more layers there. She's like almost hurt and feeling just, you know, put upon, I think.
Yeah. I guess it never changes. You're always daddy's daughter.
Yeah.
So to speak.
And Kelly's performance is really layered in this episode. Mm-hmm. You know, you really get to see different colors for her, which I just loved. You know, she's so good.
Yeah, always. Always. I love watching Kelly. So the other thing going on is we have a little reveal with Teresa. So Ryan's ex Teresa from Chino calls up Sandy. You know, Sandy thinks she's calling for Ryan, but she needs to see Sandy and they meet. And the reveal is she has a black eye. From her fiance, Eddie. Now, when she turned and did the reveal, like, or not turned, but like when the reveal was, I was like, oh shit, you know, because this is a serious issue, you know.
And well, yeah, another, it's domestic violence.
Yeah, like yet another thing we're covering on the OC, domestic violence is brought up. And it's like, oh fuck, like this, you know, this is a heavy thing.
No, it's a very, it's a very, very prevalent, unfortunately, prevalent thing in our society. And so many women, especially of low economic status or color, I was looking at some stats because I wanted to be able to speak about this. It's really common and they feel so trapped in this. And I thought it was a great storyline to bring into the show. I mean, just when we were being kind of lighthearted, they have to, I mean, that's what the show is. It has some melodrama and then this humor and how to balance that. But it's a real problem. I love Sandy as this public defender who fights for the underdog. I like when they write for him that way.
It really puts him in a sticky position too.
Right.
Because he's built this kind of trust with Ryan, But now he's being, you know, from an ethical point of view, he can't really share the knowledge that he has with Ryan. And that kind of jeopardizes this trust between the two of them. And because they're minors, it also, you know, puts it under a spotlight in a way that, you know, it's a really kind of dire situation. It's like, well, what do you can't, this is going to be the rest of your life. The choices that you make today are going to affect your tomorrow.
Yeah.
I love how the show really folds those dynamics into it. You know, the teen angst and a lot of the dysfunction of the world, you know, that we operate in. And there's a relatability to it that services the escapism. You know, there's an ability to be able to relate to the storylines while you're escaping from your own sort of day to day, but it touches on things that people are dealing with,
right,
in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was really ahead of its time.
And when Sandy says, well, you know, he's just such a great sounding board for her and also just somebody that she can trust. But when he says, you know, you're not going back to this guy, you're not going to marry him.
Right.
And she says, it's complicated. And he, instead of saying, no, it's not, he says, you're right. It's never just simple. You're right.
Mm-hmm. So really, what are you going to do? That.
Right. And that idea now later on, since we're on this subject later on that, and he's correct that it's such a trigger for Ryan because he literally is an expert on domestic violence growing up with it. And it's a trigger. And the only way he knows how to do is go fisticuffs or meet violence with violence. And even Sandy has the idea that I'm going to go beat some sense into this guy. I couldn't sleep. You know, that thing we wrestle with when we think we've been given information and now we have to do something about it to fix it. So even Sandy as a father figure wants to do something as a man, you know, but, and then his own advice is she's got to make her decision on her own. This is her journey. And there's just no one, it's not black and white. There's no one answer to this.
There isn't. Yeah. And it's so, the fact that she, you know, she doesn't want to press charges and she's like, well, he won't do it again. And he apologized. And all these patterns that are actually real in life when domestic violence is present. And it's just, it's heartbreaking, you know, because it's relatable, I think, to a lot of women. And the way it's handled on this show, you know, Ryan getting so frustrated and, like you said, wanting to just go beat this dude's ass, which I think is the natural reaction for a lot of people. I don't know, just it really like got to me this episode. And I know, you know, this is going on right now, like that whole thing in the news about Gabby, you know, the girl who you watch this video of the cops like dealing with this couple when like a domestic violent, like, or domestic disturbance, whatever it was called in. And you're watching this and you're like, God, you don't, there's so many things that go on in relationships. And like, you're watching it from the outside. And me watching that video, I was like, I see signs of a girl hiding and thinking that she's in the wrong because she's, maybe there's like abuse in the relationship. It just, I mean, it could be the media and what I'm reading into it, but you're watching this and it's just like, it just shows you, it just happens more often than you would probably think. And just dealing with it in this episode was so heavy. And I was like, really
right.
Had a strong reaction to it and just how realistic it is where the girl is like, no, he won't do it. Or the girl, the guy, whoever it is, like he won't, they won't do it again.
It doesn't discriminate. I mean, my status or statistics that I threw out, it's not necessarily, I mean, it can happen to anybody.
Right.
It's even more heightened now, considering what we're coming out of and
right.
You know, with the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It really, I mean, I don't know what you found in your statistic search, Linda, but from what I understand, a lot of those numbers are skyrocketing now with domestic violence.
It might even
because
be more
trapped together.
Yeah. They were saying that because people couldn't leave the house, that it was happening more because of the pandemic. I mean, I read that. I don't know where I saw it, but
the statistic was one in every four female on the planet.
Are you kidding?
Experienced it somehow in their lifetime.
Wow.
Which, and that was actually from a few years back. So,
you know, these relationships, they're like cycles and they're patterns. And some of it is like addiction, like a drug, where it happens, mm-hmm. but then the apology is so profound and passionate and whatever it is, it's like you crave that on the other end of it. It's there's so many different versions and that's just one, but there's just so much to it. And, you know, this show really tackles so many different topics.
It really does. There's a lot in one episode.
Well, and also you guys, it feels like, you know, we've met Eddie and there's been no mention of this. So was it a tool to bring Teresa back or yes. was it always in the back of their mind? But that's the thing, you know, Teresa, you know, all of a sudden he's an abuser, but it doesn't have to be presented to the audience for everything that's going on behind the scenes, whether it's Kirsten's drinking or Caleb's maneuvering, things that are happening behind the scenes aren't always going to be presented in every script. And I think that's kind of the beauty of television, that it feels like it's out of the blue that he did this, but mm-hmm. maybe he's done it. And that was one of the reasons she was running to Ryan.
Yeah. She implies that it wasn't the first time.
Exactly.
We know the story of boy meets girl, but what about girl meets girl, or maybe boy meets girl, and then they meet another girl? With Dipsy, the stories continue beyond the initial meetup. Come hear what happens behind closed doors.
Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on.
Each Dipsy audio story features characters that feel like real people in immersive scenarios, so you feel like you're right there. They release new content every week, so there's always more to explore, no matter who you're into or what turns you on. I mean, these are really fun. I'm really enjoying these stories. It's like my little romance novel, but spoken to me. It's quite nice.
And if you need to wind down, Dipsy also has wellness sessions, sensual bedtime stories, and soundscapes to help you relax before you drift off. And I don't know about you, but I often have a very racing mind, and that can sometimes lead to insomnia. Dipsy helps me turn this mind off, and it helps me drift away.
For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/OC.
That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/OC. dipseastories.com/OC.
I'm so glad Article is one of our sponsors because they are one of my favorite furniture brands.
Article is the easiest way to make your space look beautiful. This direct-to-consumer company combines the curation of a boutique furniture store with the comfort and simplicity of shopping online.
I have so many things from Article. The desk I'm using right now. The chairs I use. I just ordered a side table. I mean, just the options are endless and everything is just so cute and stylish and affordable.
And I've been thinking about getting a new sofa and I'm kind of thinking like a bold choice. I've got my eye on the Seven Pacific Blue sofa or maybe the Cascadia Blue, but I can't decide. No matter what, it will be beautiful.
You'll be surprised at their prices. They're so reasonable. How do they do it? Article keeps their prices low by cutting out the middleman and selling directly to you. No showrooms, salespeople, or markups.
Fast, affordable shipping is available across the U.S. and Canada and is free on orders over $999.
Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. Go to article.com/OC and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/OC to get $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. Let's get a little more lighthearted, shall we?
Let's get back to some shenanigans.
Lots of shenanigans are going on. Right. I think it's really funny when you go to Kirsten to talk about planning the shower, and Kirsten's your maid of honor.
Oh my God. I remember... So I just loved having, this is when you'd open the script and you see this dialogue and she's the Tasmanian devil. When she comes in, first of all, we're still kind of reeling from the fact that she had this affair with Luke and right. at the expense, I mean, she'll do anything, push away her daughter and get rid of everyone in her path to marry a man with wealth and have power. Mm-hmm. And then she's going to barrel into this room and tell Kirsten that she's throwing her a shower and she's the maid of honor. And Kirsten's just like, what? And she's like, well, you're my best friend. And I thought about it. And I'm like, have you guys ever had somebody say to you, well, you're my best friend. And you're like, I am? I feel like I was like, it triggered something in me. And I was like, I wonder if, you know, because I didn't grow up saying I have a best friend. I have lots of friends that were very close, but all of a sudden somebody's saying, you're my best friend. And you're just like, I don't even like you.
You know what's so interesting? I'm actually going through a best friend thing right now with my daughter. She started school again, and a little girl that was her best friend in kindergarten isn't really like playing with her that much. And so she feels like she doesn't have a best friend at school. And it's really like, she's really having a hard time with it. And so I'm trying to like be like, you know, you could have lots of friends and be open mm-hmm. to lots of friends. And a best friend, I'm trying to like de-emphasize like the meaning of it. It's just really interesting that it's going on right now. And it's really hard, and navigating these things with kids is really hard. But
yeah.
I'm like, you have so many best friends in your life. Like you don't have to feel, and she's just talking about like, well, this person has this best friend at school and best friend. And I'm like, well, what's a best friend? It's someone that's nice, someone you want to play with, and you have lots of those. Like, trying to figure that out. Nothing to do with Julie and Kirsten, but still.
Girls.
Well, girls. The definition of best friend.
Yes.
Right? Everybody's yes. definition of it
right.
changes.
And she's your maid of honor. Another thing going on, so this was pretty funny. So Seth and Summer, obviously going strong, and Summer gets a phone call, and it's like she's talking to her best friend.
Right.
Here we are again. yeah. And the way she's like talking and everything. And he's like, who are those? She's like, my dad. Well, he's like my best friend, which was pretty funny. And so we set up where Seth wants to meet him because they are serious now. And if he's like her best friend, and this was like, oh my God.
The lunch is so funny.
Oh my God. The lunch. So we introduced Michael Norrie in this episode, who plays my father. What's his name? Dr. Roberts? I can't think. What's his first
yeah.
name? Do you know,
yeah.
Mindy? Don't you wind up marrying him or something?
Neil Roberts.
Neil Roberts.
Yes, we live together,
okay.
Rach.
Yes. Okay, so this lunch, like, Seth just flailing. First of all, I mean, it's very relatable, but also it's also insane. Like, he's lost his mind. But it's really endearing and sweet and so uncomfortable. Was anyone uncomfortable? Because I sure was.
That's what I love about the scene is the way that it's shot. It makes you feel like really like we got to get out of this. Like, can we get out of this scene already?
Yeah.
So I had a different take. And it's interesting because, you know, getting prepared for this. And I realized that I sometimes jump back to when I first watched it back in 2004. Mm-hmm. And I was always going, go, Brody. That was such a great, you know, liking the dialogue and his choices as an actor.
He's so good in it, in that right. scene, that he really plays that discomfort.
Right. And I was like, I remember thinking, what an asshole Dr. Roberts is. Uh-huh. You know, he's like, and liking it. And then trying to have a different, more, you know, objective look and thinking, whoa, here's Seth going on about meeting her dad, and she's explaining, he's my best friend, and we talk about me, and you're trying, and Summer's trying to get him to see through her eyes how important it is, and he's just still so self-absorbed that he's doesn't know what to wear and what he's going to do, and he's going to manipulate and smoke and mirrors and to gain his trust, and I realize that it was so awkward and he failed so miserably because he was so self-centered, because he wasn't seeing what, he wasn't listening to his woman or to his girl.
Right.
And not taking it, seriously that just be here and let us be, you know, so.
Interesting perspective.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because at the end, when he finally, you know, when we get to the point where it's really so upsetting, even I was like, why is Summer so upset? And even because I was kind of coming from Seth's point of view. Mm-hmm. And I realized when he's like, it's just, I mean, nothing matters. You and me matter. No, you don't come between a girl and her dad if it's that important to her. And every time you've explained it, he's just not getting it. So he's got a lot of growth to do.
Interesting. Yeah. That works.
Yeah, it's like he's flooded by the need to be accepted mm-hmm. by Summer's dad, you know, like
his neuroses get the better.
His neurosis really comes out. Mm-hmm. It just goes, you know, off the rails.
Yeah.
And his way of dealing with it is just talking over it and trying to fix it constantly. And he gets so caught up in that he misses the mark. Mm-hmm. And it's really well played, the discomfort that he plays in it.
Oh, yeah. My favorite part of the whole scene is at the end where my dad like is drinking his drink and then Adam like matches him and he's like looking and like taking a big swig too. I laughed out loud. I was like, that's funny.
I do want to commend Michael Nouri as well, because he's got such a presence on camera. And off camera, I found him to be gregarious and very quirky. But on camera, when thinking back to Flashdance and all of these films that he's ever done, he's just got this elegance and this peaceful delivery. And it's just, it feels so different to Michael Nouri. So that was the first time. No, wait, what? Do we see him again soon? I'll have to look. Sorry, guys. I'm jumping forward because I was curious why Michael Nouri would do such a small little scene.
Well, that's just his introduction, because clearly he has a bigger arc on the show. Since you live with him, Melinda.
Before we get into the shower, though, I do want to say in Jimmy's apartment, the Jimmy and Haley making out is hysterical. Like, it got hot and heavy and pretty hysterical. Marissa walking in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember shooting that? What was that like for you, Amanda?
I do remember shooting that.
You know, Tate's quite the ladies man, or was. He's married now.
Yeah. And that, like, playing the moments, like, what's so funny about this episode is, like, they know it's totally wrong and that they shouldn't be doing this. And everybody's going to be upset about it. And they're sneaking around like teenagers trying to hide the fact that they're, you know, just necking constantly. And, you know, and it's like they get caught by Marissa, and then we get caught at the end by Kirsten and Julie, right? You guys walk out the door and we're
That's
like—
That's so funny.
It's just, it's so fun. And they can't hide it, you know? Like they just, they think they've totally pulled it off and that they're hiding, you know, the obvious from everybody. And it's so funny how Marissa totally calls Jimmy on it after Haley leaves. It's like, you guys need to get your story straight. Like, clearly you're not prepared to hide your untoward ways. I do remember. I remember filming that day. We shot like a few different things in that on that set, and it was, you know, it was trying to find that balance of getting sort of hot and heavy before Marissa comes in, and, you know, and where it was going to, you know, we're going to be on the couch, like, where is it, you know, am I on my way out the door or whatever? And I think it plays really well how they set it up. And she, you know, we're right there when Marissa walks through the door. So it's like, you can't hide.
You know, first of all, teenagers see way more than adults think they do. I mean, they're smart. They're on it. They're operating on all cylinders. And then Marissa says, "Dad, I'm actually happy for you." Complete antithesis with Julie. I mean, Julie's like, I don't even know how Marissa's maintaining right now, actually. And then she decides not to hurt him and tell him about living with Caleb and Julie. She decides, you know, she's got a lot going on. It's been a theme throughout this that she takes on the weight of these very flawed adults in her life. Mm-hmm. And she's just so vulnerable and fragile, like, all the time.
Well, and that moment of acceptance where she sort of accepts her dad for, you know, trying to move on with his life and be happy, you know, and the vulnerability that comes with it. It's sort of a sigh of relief, I think, for Jimmy too, because Jimmy's been through a lot as well up to this point. Like, the whole family's kind of been just ripped apart.
And Marissa is currently going through, you know, Caleb having her by her balls, so to speak.
Yeah,
you know,
she's being blackmailed.
So she has to help with the shower. Like, everything she's doing, she's going to be in the wedding, she has to live with them, and she's doing it. Which leads to the next thing, which is hilarious, because Marissa has to help Kirsten with this shower. And so they're helping with the guest list and whatever. We cut to the scene where Aunt Cindy has arrived.
Right.
Played by
Cindy's a train wreck.
Holly Fields, right? Mm-hmm. She was fantastic, by the way.
She's great.
Oh my gosh. I just thought she was so awesome. And she's in there smoking a cigarette. Like, it's so clear, the picture being painted, like, okay, this is, you know, the bad seed, whatever you want. Well, I don't know. Julie isn't so great herself at times, but clearly there's stuff here.
It's emulating that cliche trailer park trash thing, mm-hmm. because they grew up in a trailer park, apparently. And it was so weird. And not to say, honestly, the trailer park that we shot in, when we get to that, it was nothing like what is the stereotype. So I'm just putting that out there. But it was so weird to see somebody smoking inside. Even then, in 2003, it's like, why would Kirsten say okay to that, you know?
I don't think she did. She was just kind of like,
oh God. Like, yeah. Like, what do I do here? Like, when, mm-hmm. and her stories, you know, they're fun and all that. Of course, Marissa knows exactly what she's doing and somehow she can get back at her mom and she knows how difficult that is. And that's, you know, I'm not on a lot of bloopers, but because I don't like to mess up, but that's, I walked in and I literally said, the line is, what the hell are you doing here? And I said, what the fuck? Oh shit. And I had to turn around and I said, that was a blooper. Just so you know.
What the fuck are you doing here? Well, that was the sentiment behind it.
Well, it's like the theme of this episode is discomfort. Yes. You know, like there's so many uncomfortable situations that are happening.
You know, and here's the thing that's interesting too, is the Julie that Aunt Cindy describes is a lot more fun than this uptight.
Oh yeah.
You know, putting on, you know, smoke and mirrors and superficial. Right. And it sounds a lot more fun than the Julie that it's, we're,
yeah,
the Newport
you
Julie.
Know, right. You get to the shower, and I know this is a little further down the line. And, you know, this is where Aunt Cindy's like, you guys want to play a game? Like, how well do you know them? And then what's her favorite food? This was like my favorite thing, because one of your noopsy friends is like, you know, rosemary, salmon, or whatever it was. And like roasted carrots. Sea bass. Yeah. And she's like, eh, the double-double, extra sauce. And I was like, hell yeah. Like, that's way more, like, interesting and cool to be your favorite food than, like, Chilean sea bass. I was like, yeah, Julie, get back to your roots here.
Well, and that's what's funny is I was actually born in Upland, California, and lived in Claremont, California for the first 3 years of my life. And the original In-N-Out Burger, for everyone who doesn't know In-N-Out Burger, it's a very classic California-based fast food. And it started, you know, Route 66 back in the 50s, I think. But I grew up next to the original one. And my family only, if we had fast food, my dad was very particular. There's no such thing as McDonald's. It's only In-N-Out. And that was what we would get for fast food.
Way cooler.
So, yeah. So I actually essentially grew up, I mean, it's different. It's LA County still, but the Riverside County is just south. So I thought about that. I was like, oh, actually, and Riverside isn't as bad as we make it out to be as, you know, on the show. I'm not really sure why. Oh, and you know, when Cindy and Julie are actually talking about, I couldn't take you with me. It's literally like maybe a 20, 30 minute drive to LA. You know?
Just couldn't do it.
I'm always thinking about the, you know, Chino's really only 40 minutes or, you know, these things aren't that far away. And I don't know if it's so much, it's not the town of Riverside. It's just what their low, you know, economic status was that they lived in a trailer park and they didn't, and it just happened to be in Riverside. And so.
Right.
But we see a lot of vulnerability from Julie here, like bringing in her past, and you see just how flawed she is and how much like shame she has about her upbringing and her past and how she believes people are going to judge. I mean, she's been going through this whole show up until now, kind of with this, I don't care what people think about me, you know, with Jimmy and Luke and all of that. But the one thing that can really knock her off balance is her sister showing up and really assuming it's about money and not getting that her sister might just have some feelings. And so this is the beginning of some growth, you know, for Julie. It's she's not to the humble place yet, but we'll see that coming up later in some other seasons.
it really exposes Julie and what her past is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Her in and out past.
Her in and out past.
But, you know, right. So this was actually interesting. So the shower, the location, I thought this was mm-hmm. an interesting fact. That it was shot at what used to be Marine Land of the Pacific.
Did you ever go to the Marine Land?
I don't.
So when I was.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay, so you guys know what SeaWorld is. So Marine Land was right there on the cliffs, you know, kind of like a SeaWorld. And we used to go there in the 70s. And it had, you know, slides and all kinds of things for kids. So when we shot this, I remember specifically it being, and all of this stuff between the shower and Seth's, the lunch and everything was combined between the Trump International Golf Course, which is like 10 minutes south, and then the Marine Land property, which is now the Terranea Resort.
Right.
Yes.
Thank you. You're connecting the dots for me.
Yeah. So at that time, it shut down in the late 80s as a Marine Land, and it sat there. And then they erected a gazebo for weddings, and it was sold in 2006. And then it turned into that resort. When it comes to locations and such, that, you know, the locations, it's not just, hey, we want to shoot here. It's, okay, we need that chapel or we need that golf course. And what can we, but we need an interior. How do we make the best out of those locations without having to move too many times? Yeah. So I think so that sweeping, as you see the shower and you see that sweeping shot, that's the Marine Land. And then the interiors and like Ryan taking off, that's, I think, at the that's at the golf club.
Right.
Down the street. Yeah, little tidbits.
I'm going to ask my parents if we went to Marine Land. I bet we did. If it was late 80s, I bet we did. Not to support those kind of things, but.
Okay, so, but going back to that shower, when, you know, Teresa is really, and this is why I love this character, she's really aware of her being, her presence affecting mm-hmm. Marissa after yes. she's made this decision, like, I don't want to, Ryan's happy. And she's got a heart of gold, you know? And she says, she seeks her out and says, you know, is it too much for you? And I'm sorry, Ryan's the one who should be here for you. I thought that was a really lovely moment between women. Yeah. I want to celebrate that.
Yeah, I would agree. Her wherewithal. But also, I was also annoyed with Teresa on the flip side, where she's there and like when they discover her and her black eye in that bakery, she gets a job at the bakery and I'm just like, come on, like just let them be happy for a minute. Like, let's not bring in, but obviously.
I kind of growled at the TV a number of times. When Ryan wanted to take off and go to Chino, I was like, no, because mm-hmm. I think I know the show pretty well. And in that moment, I went, I just watched the whole first season and, you know, a few months back. Mm-hmm. I don't remember Eric Balfour playing Eddie. He's not in this episode. Ryan doesn't actually go to Chino, does he? But I was waiting and I was so angry. I'm like, please don't go to Chino and beat him up again. And of course he doesn't end up doing that. So I was really grateful, but he doesn't know it. And this shows Ryan's growth as well. Yeah. He's learning to not, you know, thank God, because all Sandy can do is explain to him, please, you know, if you do this, what are you going to do? Think of the consequences of your actions. And it's still such a hard concept for human beings to constantly think about, to pause before you make these decisions that could really have some dire consequences.
Well, it's easy to be reactionary. It's a lot harder to sit with your decisions and think before you speak or think before you act.
And right.
it really shows growth for Ryan, especially at this point in the show, you know. Mm-hmm. And then what's to come, you know,
what's
in
to
the next
come,
episode.
Guys?
She gets pregnant and there's
who
that
gets
whole...
pregnant?
Oh, Rachel.
Teresa does, right?
Teresa. Well, and that's Teresa the thing is,
see, it flagged
and
something
Ryan's
in my mind.
Growth and the decisions that he makes. It's really, this episode, I think, is really a setup mm-hmm. for where Ryan ends up and having mature responses to a lot more grown up situations in his life.
Wait, is it Eddie's or Ryan's?
Well, that's the big thing.
That's part of the story.
You know, we Yeah, we
I'm
had
so
Navi
invested.
On.
I'm an audience member watching this show, just so you know, Amanda. Like, I'm literally watching it as a, I've never seen it before. And I'm very intrigued to find out.
Can I mention something? Can we mention something about Kirsten, you know, back in the shower when Julie's looking at Cindy saying, oh my gosh, it's just she's flirting with her sister's boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And Kirsten looks at Jimmy and Haley and says, I know the feeling. And then when Jimmy comes to her, when she's signing the check, and I'm like, wait. And then also back at the proposal in the lighthouse, you see Jimmy waves at Haley and Kirsten kind of shyly does that. And I thought, what? Kirsten really is holding this little flame in her heart for him.
She has a thing for Jimmy.
Well, absolutely. And what about when she says that he's basically only doing, or you're only doing it, like it's all about her and her like, it was a super kind of like narcissistic response or ego.
And I love
response.
Her first line when she walks up to sign the check, when he comes to, and she says, it's not because I'm jealous. Right. You know, like she kind of presents.
Project
with, like,
much?
Right. You know, and, but it's so, her performance is so subtle that you believe that that's what she believes. But I mean, clearly she wouldn't be as up in arms about it.
Right. Absolutely.
She didn't still kind of have a thing for him.
She's so supportive of, you know, Haley after the LA, and she's like, welcome home and all this, but you can see her in that dialogue. It's not jealousy. I just don't want to see my friend making a terrible mistake. She, Haley, uses people to get back at me. He says, no. And you can just see that Kirsten is leading with that ego underneath it. Those little character flaws come out where she's actually jealous. And, you know, what she's saying is not necessarily what's going on inside of her. And we haven't really seen that before. It is a jealousy.
And I think there's also probably a hint of betrayal there between not just Kirsten and Jimmy, but Kirsten and Haley.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, Haley's crossed a line. And even though, you know, Kirsten's married and things like that, there's still a history there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Haley's sort of unintentionally stirring the pot.
Do you think it's stirring the pot, or do you think they just are just in the moment? They're having that kind of pheromonal attraction to each other.
I think it's totally in the moment. I don't think that Haley willingly is constantly stirring the pot. I think she is impulsive about her decision making and doesn't think about the consequences or the fallout of her actions. Right. And, you know, and she kind of puts Jimmy to the test about, you know, hey, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to stay or go? Or, you know, are we going to do this thing? Or, you know, you're giving me mixed signals. And, you know, and then he finally, you know, when he comes to rescue her from the strip club, if you could call it that, rescue. But when he, you know, is there for her, you know, the next episode we see, you know, I think, or maybe it's in the same episode in the LA when, you know, Haley really calls him on it. It's like, well, where do you stand with me? You know, what are we doing here? Are you, you know, do you want me to stay? Should I go? Like, well, you know, you're giving me mixed signals. And then when they finally decide to sort of take the leap, then it's like, okay, well, we're doing this, but maybe we didn't really think this through, because the fallout and what everybody has to say about it, it's the timing's bad. We can't right now. Julie's getting married to my dad. And, you know, it's sort of this underlying thing that they have decided to jump in without thinking about how it's going to affect everybody else around them.
Right.
And so I think she unintentionally stirs the pot. You know, I think Haley just is not fully aware of how her actions affect everybody.
I think that's true of most people.
Right.
I think we tend to, you know, make choices sometimes without thinking about that ripple effect.
The other thing at the shower is the moment with Summer and Seth where clearly Summer is very distraught, as we've seen in the episode with Seth's actions at the lunch. And it looks like she's like ready to call it off in this scene because she kind of starts to cry and runs off. And it's just so, it went so bad that it looks like that's, you know, the direction she's heading. And what's interesting for me is relating to this in a sense, like I'm super close to my older brother and was dating this guy once. And the only thing that mattered was like, if he gets along with my brother, you know? And the first time they met, he could not have made a worse impression. And surely enough, that was the demise of whatever was going on with us at the time. And clearly it wasn't something, you know, that was worth fighting for. But it's just interesting how that does really affect you in these relationships and how these people come across and everything else. And so it was a little relatable for me, but also it was really sad. And I feel bad about the whole thing.
No, I'm grateful for your take on that. I kept feeling like I was Team Seth. Like, what's the big deal? He's so funny and cute and all that. We're not hearing a lot of narrative from Summer describing why. And right. It just is. And he can kind of be a tornado too with his energy. And clearly this, we're setting up this relationship. What would it be like if Sandy and Kirsten didn't approve of Summer? And maybe he's just not used to that kind of like, who wouldn't love me kind of idea. So.
Well, like in this is obviously clearly something very special, like between Seth and Summer. And I think it is worth more than Summer just being like, oh, you fucked up at lunch with my dad. Like, I think that's a little extreme, you know, for her to like go there with it. But just relatable in the sense of how much it matters to people that you look up to and respect and love, accepting who you're with. It's mm-hmm. a thing.
And it's also the very first time she's introduced any boy
right.
to him, and it failed.
Right.
So that's, it's heartbreaking. She has two people. Well, she said, I love my dad and I really like you.
Yeah.
I guess you guys haven't done the love part yet.
No, we haven't said I love you yet, I guess.
Yeah. And right now that relationship with my dad kind of trumps the one right here, which is probably pretty, pretty sad for her. But the nice tears there, little Miss Rachel.
I was trying to see him. Like, did I actually cry?
Yeah, there was a little,
a little water forming. So the end of this episode, Teresa winds up staying at the Coens in the pool house. And Ryan's going to bunk with Seth in a mansion that only has two bedrooms.
This happens quite a few times. And we've noticed that, you know, you like when you show up, when Haley shows up, she says, this is my pool house and you got the couch. And once again, it's you can have the air mattress. And a lot of people have mentioned this, like in a house that big, why not? Because, you know, Banana probably had her own room, but it's just a tool, you guys, to make sure that Ryan and Seth are in the same room so that Ryan now has to deal with neurotic Seth constantly.
It's a way better, it's a way better TV show to watch.
Yeah, right.
Totally. But when Teresa, the set just didn't go there. There was stairs to nowhere. There was no bedroom.
That is true. That is true.
When Marissa shows up, I really do like this. I mean, this is the Kirsten, like, hey, just so you know. And it's important to hear it from the adults. You know,
I
just
liked,
you know,
that.
Teresa's here. Yeah.
But
and
he
Ryan
loves
you. Here's a, you know, very gently says, it might make sense for you to make some room for Teresa in his life, which unfortunately is foreshadowing.
Yeah.
But Marissa goes, huh, okay. You can see this. She makes that decision to take some advice.
I liked that moment.
And then... Right, then, Nine Lives by South plays, and this beautiful, beautiful melancholy shot of Marissa sitting there and Ryan coming up to her. And, you know, once again, we've had an episode, just when they were supposed to be happy, there's some drama.
Yeah, and you see the look on both of their faces as we fade out. They're both like, oh yeah, they say they're going to be fine, but the look on their faces definitely says otherwise.
Right. I feel like that happened quite a few times in this episode, like, you know, when Caleb said, there is nothing about you that's going to make me walk away. And Julie goes, that look on her face is like, you know?
Yeah, you're like, well.
Well, there might be something. But you know, when he apologizes for leaving her for the day and that we're going to be fine, it was a very purposeful look for both of them to be looking away and thinking, yeah.
Nothing's ever fine in
no,
the OC.
Not, no, not in life, not in the OC, yeah. For sure.
Yes.
It's like that meme where the house is on fire and the dog is at the desk. And it's like, I'm fine. It's fine. Everything is fine.
So that was the shower, guys.
That was the shower. Episode 25.
25. Rachel, we're almost to the first end of the first season.
I know. I can't believe it. I can't wait to find out what happens, although you told me.
Sorry, I gave it all away.
Gave it all away. Well, Amanda, we have some voicemails for you. If you would not mind staying on and listen to our lovely people who have called in for you.
Yeah.
Let's hear them.
Hey, Amanda. It's Hannah. I was just wondering who you bonded with the most while being on the set of The OC. And if you have a favorite episode that you took place in, if you'd be willing to share that. Thanks. Love you, Rachel and Melinda. Had to throw that in there.
Aw, thank you.
I bonded with Kelly and Tate. I think, and most of my stuff was with them. And they really led me and guided me through a lot of this. I'm so grateful that... that I had them and that they were so generous and giving of their time and wisdom. And the LA was, I think, by far my favorite episode to film and going back to watch. It's been one of my favorites.
Tate is wonderful to work with. Yeah. Kelly is too, but Tate is just a barrel of laughs.
So much fun.
So much fun. Like,
just he's a really great guy. He's one of those guys that just lights up a room, you know?
Right? Yeah,
absolutely.
He's got such a great attitude about everything. And when we were doing the show, I remember getting into these like really philosophical conversations with him and talking about like yogi Vipassana retreats and, you know, all these meditation things. And it was just very funny. Yeah. I would never peg him for being, you know, knowledgeable about that kind of stuff. And, He's a really great actor, but also just an awesome human being.
Hi, my name is Lauren, and I would love to get your insight on Sandy's description of Haley as 10 pounds of fun in a 5-pound bag from the New Year's Eve episode. I have made my friends and family watch this episode with me every year, and most people say that this line doesn't make any sense, but I think it's actually a pretty clever description of the character. Please weigh in here. Who is right?
Great question.
What is it? A 10-pound person in a 5-pound bag? Is that what it is?
I guess Haley doesn't fit into a cookie cutter.
Or that you're slim. I don't know.
I'm not really sure. But I know Sandy does not like Haley very much. I mean, he voices it quite often in the second half of the first season about how she's just destroying their lives and you know, taking over their house. And she's a little bit bigger than her britches, so to speak. Maybe that's what the line intends, that she's a lot.
Too big, too big.
Too
well,
big.
And also
like trying to fit a, what's the saying, thing in a square hole or a peg in a...
fit a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, isn't that the saying? Maybe it's like that.
Right. No, I mean, she eats all the bagels. She eats, you know, finishes the milk and the orange
about
juice.
All this stuff. Right. Like, I just totally raid their kitchen and eat all their food and drink all their orange juice and
making life miserable for all of the Coens.
Love
Even
it.
Seth, he's like,
yeah.
Hi, Melinda and Rachel.
Hi.
My name is Michelle and I live in Florida. First, I wanted to start off by thanking you both for making this podcast for the fans. In a world that is so tough sometimes, it means so much to have something fun to look forward to each week. The OC will always be a show that is so special to me and has gotten me through all the good and bad times throughout my life so far. It really is an iconic masterpiece. My questions are actually for Amanda. I love your character, Haley, and always wondered where she ended up in life. Where do you think Haley would be now in her career and life? And do you think her and Jimmy ended up together? Thank you all for listening, and I love you guys so much.
Wow.
That was sweet.
I would imagine that Haley by now probably would have settled down to a certain degree. She was never really one to be tied down. So I think she probably ended up being an entrepreneur and found her way somewhere doing some charity thing and plugged herself in being her own boss. I can't imagine that she would ever work for anyone else. And I don't know. I think there's a nostalgia that I would have probably loved to see Haley and Jimmy end up together.
Yeah, me too.
That's a good idea.
Or in a parallel universe, she actually, after they left, you know, they left and went to Berkeley, but Haley came back and took over the Newport Group. And now she's the CEO. She actually became her, she became the Kirsten. I don't know. I like to come up with things like that. Yeah. It's not as interesting or romantic. Anyway, I don't know, because Haley she was always against the corporate world. So now maybe she does a whole flip.
Hi, Amanda. My name is Francesca. I was wondering if you could share how it was for you to transition from VOC to Reunion. I think you were fantastic in both. And I was really sad that we didn't get more episodes of Reunion. Did you actually get to know how the show would have ended? Will you ever know? Thanks so much. Take care.
Reunion. Right. Reunion came after North Shore. So there was a couple years in between VOC and Reunion. And what was really interesting is that I was then 23 playing high school. So it sort of flip-flopped. Whereas when I was doing the OC, I was playing 27. And then in my 20s, then I was playing a high school student. And the transition was, I think what was really great about Reunion is it gave us an opportunity to play range from high school to 40. And it was, you know, it was a lot of fun. And we had a really great cast, and we were in sort of a bubble together because we were all in Vancouver and had relocated up there. And the show, I don't know for sure how it ended, but there was talk that the illegitimate child between Craig and Samantha was going to be the killer, but we never saw the end of it. So I don't know.
I remember watching Reunion a few times.
I ended up being, you know, after the OC, I went through a period of time where I just ended up on a lot of unfortunately failed shows. And then kind of got caught, you know, Reunion unfortunately got caught in regime change, which so often when it happens in the industry, when you get new studio executives or new network executives, they kind of want to start with a clean slate and do their own thing. And Reunion was an unfortunate part of that. We, you know, halfway through the season, the first season, a lot of the executives that were really champions of the show ended up leaving the studio and they ended up canceling the show. But then The Mentalist came along and
That a Fox show as well, Reunion?
No, that was actually CBS, but it was Warner Brothers. And I knew because of the OC, actually, because it was a Warner Brothers show, Peter Roth became also a champion of mine. And I mean, I think I should probably credit Peter for making my career because he and Marcia Shulman over at Fox, they really believed in me. And God, it just makes such a difference when you have people that have the power to employ you, mm-hmm. that really believe in your talent and what you have to offer. And they were that for me. And it was such a pivotal point in my career. And The Mentalist became such a huge part of my career too. But I don't think I would have had The Mentalist if I hadn't had the OC.
I think the three of us have Peter Roth to thank. And what we learned, which I think I only know a little bit about what I do and the world, but McGee explained to us that Peter Roth is the one who makes those decisions when it comes to testing. And he hired, you know, Rachel, Heart of Dixie, and Nikita. Those are all Warner Brothers. Yeah. So, yes. Thank you, Peter. And a lovely man.
Yeah. Love Peter.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Amanda, so much for coming on and chatting with us today and catching up. It's been a lot of fun, and you look beautiful and sounds like everything is amazing as a mom.
Thank you so much.
Professional actress.
Trying.
Yeah. No, we look forward to your projects coming up. Definitely.
Thank you.
And yeah, come again anytime. We loved having
you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me be a part of this. It was really fun. And it's been so much fun just going back and watching the show. It's such a blast from the past.
Thank you so much for listening. Follow, rate, and review. Welcome to the OC Bitches, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you like to watch us, check us out on YouTube or on HBO Max. Please leave those reviews and let us know more about what you want to hear. Bye.
Bye.